The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Today's episode is sponsored by Bob's 19th Hole and Welsh & Sons Electric. They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves.
We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated.
The very first thing we did when we started this case was making a list with contact information for all of Steven's family that we could find. One of these was his cousin, Jason Joyner. We found his name from a news interview he did a while back. He agreed to do an over-the-phone interview with one of our group members. When listening to this interview, we were all absolutely shocked. The way he described Steven and the neighborhood they lived in was vastly different from what we heard from Jody. It's very important to recognize both of these points of view. While having multiple opinions in a case makes it more difficult, it also adds a more accurate insight into the truth, as everyone remembers things differently. You will hear Lexi, Jason, and sometimes Jason's wife, who helps clarify details for him. This is all just opinion from a family member and should not be taken as fact, though it should not be dismissed either.
Is there any certain things that you were looking for information on, or
specifically what happened that night?
Okay, so there are a few different theories of what had happened or different stories, and people have assumed some things, but there were some things leading up to the disappearance that have some of us questioning what might have really happened. We know that Steven didn't come from a great family life. It was pretty rough. He was pretty much surrounded by chaos. A lot of drug activities going on in the house, alcohol. The night that he came up missing, a couple days prior to that, he had gotten into a fight at school and he was suspended. And I believe the next day he was having to return back to school, and he was got into an argument with his mom and dad about the incident that happened at school, and he didn't want to go back. I'm not sure exactly what happened then, but I know that he was going to go down to his sister's house. And from what we hear from his little brother, who was really young, and this is his only memory, is Stephen had stopped by his, or was going to go by past his bedroom window, and Eddie had said, was crying because he was leaving. And he said, "Don't worry, I'm just going down to Sissy's house. I'll be right back." And so he left. And that's when they said he never was seen again. But there's some question on that really happened or not, because of some incidences that had happened about the argument they got into before he was to go back to school. I have talked to Eddie, and she was present when I talked to Eddie growing up years later about what had happened. What was the last time you had seen Eddie? He said, you know, he told us a story about him leaving, but then there's a big gap in between that that nobody knows what's happened. And that Eddie also said that he remembers the next morning his dad rolling up some carpet and disposing of some carpet. That's where what raised a red flag for some of us in the family. I don't know if the FBI or police department ever even heard about that story or heard anything like that, because I think Eddie was too young to be questioned at that age. And I don't know if Stephen Shelley would have, you know, his parents would have let him, you know, say anything, but there was just a lot of questions on about the carpet. So that raised a red flag to some people in the family. But so I had gotten a phone call from one of my other cousins who was first cousins of my dad the next day after he came up missing, and was asked to, you know, if I want to come help look. So of course I'm going to come help look. I was on, I believe at that time I was on Hager Township Fire Department. I had access to a county radio, so I could hear some of the radio transmissions while we were out doing the search. When I arrived at the house, I noticed that the whole search and everything was just way out of order. It was total chaos going everywhere. So many people at Stephen Shelley's house, which is his parents' house, just a lot of unnecessary people that was there that had no business being there. And these are some key factors that really threw me off. And was when I went in to talk to Stephen Shelley, first, when I was walking up, I noticed that there are people holding that had possession of two-way radios that were donated to help for the search, so everybody could stay in communication. These were people that did not need communication, who weren't even out helping search, was there more for TV time. I went inside to talk to Stephen Shelley about it, and there was just young teenagers walking around everywhere. I don't think anybody was over 18. And when I got into the bedroom, because Steve was talking to somebody, so I went into the bedroom to find Shelley, to console Shelley, to see how she was doing with this whole thing. And she acted like everything was fine. She was laughing, joking, drinking a 40-ouncer. And then somebody else had stepped into the room, and I was just really thrown off by the fact that she wasn't just beside herself and hysterical that her son's missing. And at that time, I had still thought that maybe he just ran off, you know, because he had a bad life at home, that he just got mad and ran off because he got an argument with his parents or something. Not yet then, I didn't know he'd gotten, that there was an issue with fighting over the grounding thing. But I just knew that he had a hard time sometimes with his parents, and he would just run off in the neighborhood or go to his sister's house. So, but I noticed that Shelly was just acting nonchalant. Everything was okay. She was laughing, joking, cutting some jokes. And I seen her take a sip of a 40-ouncer, and I was like, to hurry, I was like, nothing. Somebody came in the room, and she asked them, and she said, go down there and get the donation box and get the money out of the donation box. Tell them I sent you. Well, that really threw me off, that she was more worried about the donation money and a 40-ouncer, and that she was laughing and acting like nothing was going on. I just took my attention off of her and went over to Steve to talk to Steve about it. And when I was talking to Steve, I was asking questions. When's the last time you seen him? You know, where have they searched? Well, you know, just typical questions that I would ask to find out where, because me and my family was going to go and search. Well, some kid comes walking up with a newspaper, trade lines or something, and broken up pot. He said, he looked at Steve and he said, Steve, you got any papers? Where can I roll this? And I just blew up. I said, what the F are you doing? I said, we're looking for a 12-year-old boy. All you are focused on is where you can roll this. And I said, there are cops everywhere out here looking for this young boy, and you're worried about where you can roll that. And I told him to get the F out of my face, get out of the house. And Steve started yelling at him, but when Steve was talking to him, Steve wasn't looking at him. He was looking at me to see my reaction, like he was mad too. And that just threw me off. He was more concerned about how I reacted as he yelled at the kid as to getting the kid out of his house. So after that, I just realized that there's no sense in talking to Steve or Shelly. I didn't know if they were drunk, if they were on something, but just something wasn't setting right. It was sickening. So I went out to outside and went up to a couple of local police officers that were there. And it was when I say that I think the Three Stooges could have done a better job at searching for Steven. That is not an exaggeration. It was so uncoordinated, unorganized. They were handing out radios to anybody. It was just chaos. So I had talked to my cousin, Earl Joyner, who had passed, and Scott Reynolds, another friend of mine, a friend of the family, who had passed. And we decided to go out and to search some local areas away from where everybody else was searching, because there was snow on the ground. So wherever you walked, there was footprints, and people were just walking anywhere, going anywhere. So they could have been covering up, or somebody walked or something. But I know that they had forced Steve to stay home at that point. He was to stay there. They didn't want him out searching. And I believe they wanted him home because maybe he was directing people away from, you know, they just had a reason why they wanted them, the mom and Stephen Shelley, to stay home. So we went out looking, searched farther away from where everybody else was at because we didn't know where everybody else had searched. Nobody even had anything coordinated. I didn't see a map. I didn't see Sheriff's Posse. I didn't see anybody who was really, who worked with the emergency services looking at certain areas. Not to say that they weren't. So I went and searched some areas and came back and talked to Earl, my cousin Earl, and everything was on our mind. We all had the same idea. Hey, are they really, is anybody looking at Stephen Shelley? You know, but it just didn't come up. We knew what we were thinking. We knew what was going on, but we really didn't say anything. And then from that point, it was just our hands were in the air. We didn't know what to think. But as I sat back longer and started to think about Shelley's reaction, Steve's reaction, the chaos of the search party, just things weren't right. I started to think that there was too many conspiracy theories or too many rumors of where he could have been, what was doing this. But I do know later on from people asking questions and people that Steve and Shelley were more comfortable with of saying what they were doing the night before, or that I believe it was the night when he had left, because she had heard these stories too, my wife here, that night that Stephen got into an argument with his mom and his dad, that they were actually in the basement smoking crack. And there was a close friend of the family, Mary, who was there, Shelley, Steve, and some other guy who I don't know who he was. They were there the night that Stephen had disappeared. So, but the sad thing is, every one of those people are dead today. None of them are alive. So, you know, there's no way of figuring out what had actually happened. I know over the years that I would keep in contact with the FBI, and I had two family members who would go with me, and they had contacted me and asked me the same thing. Do you think that they should start looking into Stephen Shelley? And I was like, absolutely. I don't know why they haven't yet. So we went and met with Benton Township and an FBI agent, and we had asked some questions about, you know, where we get in the case. Have you looked into Stephen Shelley? And they were like, yeah, we have. I said, well, have you given a polygraph? And they said, yes, we have. And I asked about that. And when I asked if they failed or passed, they couldn't give me the answer, but they gave me a certain nod. When I said, did they fail? They kind of gave me a visual answer, but not a audible answer. But they said they have no physical evidence, that they're working on nothing. They were really hush hush about the investigation, and we just want answers. We were still in the dark. We still know nothing. And so we didn't get anything. And over the years, it was the same thing. We just have got nothing and nothing. And it's just gotten colder and colder and colder. But me and her had went back and looked at some of on Facebook. I think it was a Facebook. We looked at Shelley's stuff. We looked at Shelley's Facebook, and when there was pictures of Steve, you can look at pictures of Steve before Stephen came up missing, and he was always smiling, always joking, always laughing. But then you could slowly look at his face in these pictures and see that something was eating him up. And me and her brought it to each other's attention. Look at Steve's face. Look at his eyes. Something's eating him up. Now, whether it was because his son came up missing, don't know. It could have that effect, or if he knew something, or was covering something up, or was responsible for something. We just commented about that. And then we went back and talked to, who was it that called us? My mom? That said they had found.
We're in tennis.
Okay. Was that about Steve, or was that about knowing that somebody else, that somebody's going to come forward?
Oh, no, it was Jody.
Okay. His half-sister Jody had contacted me and said, hey, FBI who was investigating it, says that they might have a lead and somebody's going to come forward with some valuable information. And we were like, hey, wow, that's huge. Somebody's going to come forward with some information. And we didn't hear anything, hadn't heard anything. And then we went on vacation to Tennessee, and I got a phone call from my mother stating that Steve, his dad, died in his sleep, and they believe it was a drug overdose. That was kind of strange to us that, you know, for one, why would Steve do some drugs and go to bed? Steve was the type, if he's going to do something, he's going to stay up and enjoy the high. I mean, the first thing me and her head was said to each other was, wow, that'd be kind of weird if he was the one who's going to come forward with the information, and that, you know, Shelley might have drugged him, might have put something in and killed him. And, you know, we're like, yeah, well, we don't want to assume that, you know, but it was heavy on our hearts that maybe that's what happened. And it wasn't, but a week or two after that, Shelley died from a drug overdose. But they said in between that 2 weeks, she was incoherent the whole time, that she kept herself so drugged up and so high that she could barely speak, and it was like she slowly killed herself. So I feel in my heart, now this is an assumption, this is my opinion, so it doesn't stand anywhere, but I do believe that Steve was going to say something. Steve was going to come forward and say something about what happened to Stephen, and she knew it, and she killed him and then killed herself. That's my personal opinion. That's why they haven't found no answers. And believe me, we've looked for answers. My cousin Earl, who passed away last year, paid a lot of money for Sylvia Brown. I don't know if you know who she is. Uh-huh. Sylvia Brown is a well-known psychic who helped FBI. She's been on Montel Williams. She's written books. She's been on many different TV programs. He paid a good chunk of money to talk with her about Stephen's case. She said Stephen, I quote, was laying on his left side, kind of on his stomach, but his left side face down somewhere. She didn't say whether he was in a grave. She didn't say nothing, but that's the information she had. And that's all we have gotten. That's all, you know, and necessarily, I'm not a firm believer in psychics. You know, she was credible. She was well known for helping and solving cases, but that didn't help us or give us a positive, you know, outlook on what happened or any hope. But we've just this whole time have been just waiting and waiting for information and don't have nothing. If people do know something or did know something, or if they did confess it to somebody, Steve came from a very violent background. His dad did. His dad was a member of Lucifer Sons, who was an outlaw motorcycle club out of Wisconsin. I could say that Steve was a well-rounded criminal. Between the dealing with drugs, between the outlaw club, between the lifestyle he led, between just his whole life, he was a hustler, and he was a jive talker. He was, you couldn't believe anything that came out of his mouth. He was a habitual liar who would believe his own lies. He could tell you a story and make you believe it. He could tell you that the sky is purple, and you would almost start to wonder if the sky was purple. So people were scared. Some people didn't want everybody to turn on them or to get wrapped up in it with Stephen Shelley because, you know, in that lifestyle, you know, and you're a well-rounded criminal, you can learn out different things to make people disappear, if I guess you'd say something like that, you know. And so I think it was fear of people coming forward and saying anything out of what would happen to them in retaliation. And still to this day, you know, his sister is a part of an outlaw motorcycle club. So people still don't want to come forward. You know, and if they do, it's been so long, people start to lose the details into what really happened. You know, you could ask me, you know, what was I doing that day? I can't remember, but I sure can remember when they came up and told me he was missing, you know, and where I went from there. When it's been 24 years, you know, things start to get a little foggy, you know, but there's a lot of things that stick out in your mind that just don't go away, and they live with you and they resonate in you. And
the holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com. Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at WeightWatchers.com.
You this information I'm speaking of today, I've also let the FBI know. Once again, we don't know anything. I guess the older I get and the more it gets to be colder and colder, the more I'm just not scared to say anything about what I think, what happened, what about, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, it's about Steven and not about what retaliation would be. I just really think that his mom and dad had something to do with it. I think that they were the ones that did it, or Shelly had done it, because I have seen Shelly myself. When I would go over, see, I didn't hang out with the family. My dad didn't allow it. I was raised different than what they were doing, but I also was interested and cared about my great aunts and uncles and my grandma and grandpa, because they lived in that same neighborhood. They were known to steal money from them because, you know, they're retired or on disability. They would go in their Bible and take money from their, you know, and I would go over to make sure that they were being done right. Nobody was, you know, because we had issues in the past. And I would go over there to visit my Aunt Linda, who lived with them, and they kind of sponged off her, or, you know, used her for whatever resources she had. And I would watch Shelly snatch Steven up by his ear. And I mean, yank him up by his ear. I've seen him snatch up by his hair. I've just almost treated like a wild animal in a way, I guess. I've seen dogs treated better. So that's kind of why Steven was so drawn to me, is because when I'd come over, none of that would happen. I'd put it to a stop instantly. Hey, what are you doing? You know, and so when I would get there, everybody'd be so happy to see me that there was no issues. And Steven felt like he was safe for a minute. So he would instantly want to come over and show me his artwork. He would want to, you know, talk about this, talk about that. So I would take the time with Steven because I knew he wasn't getting any kind of love from anybody in that family. Most of the time, at the age of 4, 5, 6, the only way I could describe Steven at that time was, what was that from the cartoon?
Wild
Thornberries. That little wild kid that ran around at, what was his name?
Johnny.
Yeah, that was Steven. He was just a little wild thing. Long hair wild, because he wasn't having the structure and the right, correct discipline that he needed. So he was just, but as he got older and matured, he wasn't acting like that. He was finding interest, but he had a hard time at school because of the racial division. You know, he was one of a few white kids in a majority of black schools, and he was a hard kid. He came from a different life than a lot of them. So he had a lot of issues, you know. He wasn't exactly raised around a racial diverse family. There was a lot of racism, you know, I mean, being in that kind of growing up or surrounded by people like that in the Outlaw Motorcycle Club. Back then, there was a lot of racism going on, you know, so he took on a little of that, you know, and I know that he was the type of kid, if he said something he didn't like it, he fought back, because that's all he knew, was to fight for everything he could get. It was a terrible childhood. So I was drawn to Steven when he would come over. I would always check in and make sure he was good, but more of the focus was also on, are they doing my Aunt Linda wrong? Are they taking her money? Or just to check, sure, make sure they're doing okay. Here we are today, still with no answers, no closer when I feel we were the day that he come up missing. Myself, I thought that he just ran off. He just got mad at his mom and dad, got in an argument, ran down to his sister's house, went somewhere. Or, I mean, there was people even said that maybe he just got in a vehicle, somebody took off because of getting in a fight with his mom and just acting, you know, impulsive, just going because he was mad. But here we are. He didn't know how to survive on his own. He had no sort of skills to survive out in the wild, or he was only 12, so he didn't know how to hustle, you know, and didn't survive. So really resonates me that whoever did it was, I feel like, his mom and dad.
If they were to do it, what kind of motivation would they have?
I think it would be accident. I think that now this is something that we heard, but we don't know is true, that he had gotten a fight with his mom or dad and somebody hit him and his head smacked the door frame, and that he maybe went to bed, maybe some issues there, and he passed and they just rolled it up and disposed of him because they knew they were getting in trouble. That's what I feel. I mean, it kind of falls in line with what I think, but we're not sure how that happened. I'm not even sure where that came from.
There's a lot of assumptions.
Yeah. Cousins talk to cousins and cousins, you know what I mean? And so we don't know. I mean, if they did do something, it was an accident. I think that they were just, the older he got, the rougher they got on him, because he's not a little boy you can just swat on the butt or drag him by his ear. I think that the older he got, the more that he was treated like a young man, or his mom was just off the hook. We can say these things, and the reason why we went to the FBI without some of the closer, his intermediate family, is because we just didn't want to get involved and get wrapped up in some of the stuff that they were involved in, or if it would, yeah, just the whole dynamic of the family, you know. I went right away and went to the FBI and told them what I felt, but the rest of the family wasn't going to say nothing. They were just too... They just wanted to stay out of it. But for me, being at Steven and being as a young 12-year-old boy, shouldn't zip your lip about nothing. You know, you come forward with anything. If they don't like you, if there's issues, you deal with that. You know, you call the police, you let them know that, hey, I'm feeling uncomfortable because of what I said, and just nothing. Nobody's come forward. And I believe the people who were there, being that they're all dead, and most of them drug, I think they're all, it was all overdoses, wasn't it?
Pretty much,
yeah. So anybody who was really there that night and would know is gone. So that, you know, we'll never know the answers on them.
How do you think the police have handled the investigation?
They've been very hush-hush about it, which is understandable because it's an ongoing investigation. But as far as clues or evidence when it first happened, I believe that it was so unorganized and he let so many people onto the property of his house where his mom and dad lived, that there were so many people in and out that if there was any evidence, it was lost. They should have roped that house off and told everybody to stay outside and done their search party and where everybody meets across the street at the store parking lot, that they should have never stepped foot on that property. They should have never let all those people in that house. And I think that they lost any kind of evidence that they could have gotten or it was destroyed. And myself, I believe that they knew they dropped the ball and that's why that this is not pushed in. And we don't have any information because they knew that the investigation was just a cluster.
Do you know what areas they did end up searching?
They searched all the Benton Heights areas as far as like there used to be, I think it started at Holly and went down to Lawrence Avenue. There was a bunch of streets there that were actually tore down from the airport where it was at. So if there was ever anything there, we'd lose evidence there because they tore everything down for the airport. That area was searched. I know I went down to Benton Center Road and there was the backside of Benton Heights, there was a power line and it's a creek. And on the backside of that was a bunch of fields, woods and apple orchards, I think. So like, well, that's where me and Earl and Scott Reynolds went and searched. And then they searched some ponds that were nearby. They searched, I know me and his sister went and searched a neighborhood, Ravine Trailer Park there in Benton Harbor. We went and searched there at any abandoned trailers that he thought he might go to. They searched any field that was around there. I think after going to and searching on Benton Center that they should have focused more on where the power lines went down in the low-lying area and the swampy area. That's where I feel they should have looked. But I don't know if they've ever searched that area or not. I'm sure with all the people that were out, you know, I'm pretty sure that they searched so far, but a lot of it was so overgrown and it was winter and a lot of standing water. So I'm not sure all the areas. I know where I focused on, but to go up and ask somebody where they searched, there was nobody to ask. There was just, I mean, it was even hard to even find anybody at his house that was running or in charge of anything. It was that chaotic. It's hard to say. I've tried to pick Eddie, his little brother's head a little bit on what he asked, but he said he was so young that he don't remember. Or does he remember some things and just didn't want to say because he knew it would pin his mom and dad? And regardless, he loved his mom, he loved his dad. And I'm not sure. I don't think his sister would know anything. I know his sister was studying criminal law or something. She was going to be a probation officer and parole officer and then had some issues happen in her life that turned her away. But I don't think his sister knows anything. If in my heart tells me she wouldn't, and if she does, I don't think she would come forward either.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the name Michael Clark?
Michael Clark. I know some Clarks, but I don't know if I know Michael Clark. Yeah. I hadn't been around that area in a long time when he came up missing, but I know there was another gentleman who was down in the basement when they were smoking crack. I don't know who that guy was. I never got a name. I heard he died. Mm-hmm. So in prison, the story we got was that somebody thought that he might have something to do with Steven and killed him in prison. I'm not sure of 100% on that. See, and there's so many different theories, you know, did they check the police department to see that that was actually happening? There's no evidence to say that mm-hmm. happened. And is that just a story to camouflage or throw you off smoke and mirror?
There's so many stories.
Yes.
Like a lot.
Yeah.
We've heard a lot. We've read a lot. When I was going through the newspapers, there was just a lot of people talking.
Yeah. And that's what we can't. You just don't know, you know. If you knew his life, how he was at home and how he was treated at home and how just rough it was, and just know if there was a whole lot of moments in his life where he's seen his parents sober. It was just one party after another. And if they weren't partying, then they were sleep, you know, or they were in jail. Or, you know, another red flag about the parents leaving or the parents was, you know, it wasn't long after that he had died that they moved to Milwaukee. Now, you wouldn't be able to drag me away from the area that my son come up missing and move away unless you thought the heat was coming down on you. When things settled down and things weren't so hot, they came back, you know, because as Stephen's, my aunt, Nancy, who it's his dad, Stephen's grandma lived here. So they couldn't get too far away from her because she would clean up their mess a lot, you know, or like when they were low on money, she would be there to loan money. My aunt Nancy's husband, Marty, now they were very, very Christian oriented and they great people, so, you know, that they would have nothing to do with nothing. They wouldn't cover up nothing because they were strict by the word of God. So, but Marty always kept them working. You know, Marty was hung drywall, and when they would get low and need work or something happened, they'd go to work for with Michael Martin. You know, so So it's mom and Marty with their cash cow. That's where they come back if they need to hustle some money up, you know? So I just know that I would never give up searching, regardless of what anybody said. If somebody gave me an idea of what happened, I would go check that idea, you know? Still this day, we drive past and just wonder, you know, we can't go through we can't go through that neighborhood without just wondering. It's left a really bad stain in our heart that, you know, there's been no answers and there's so many stories. And as somebody to sit down still this day, and that's why it thrills me that you guys are taking some time to look at all the pieces of the puzzle, because we're not hearing nothing. You know, you told me some information I have heard yet. You know, and these are things that we need to know, you know, but I don't like to really associate myself with a part of the family. You know, it's just my children don't even know who they are. They've never met them. They will never meet them, you know, because we have a good life. My kids have structure. We have morals. We, you know, my kids, my older children had never seen me touch alcohol till they were way in their 20s. This wasn't something I did around them. It's not something we do at all now. It's not, you know, it's just they're a product of their environment. His environment was pretty rough.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
We just find it really disturbing that when they were going to, they thought they had a lead and someone was going to come forward, Stephen dies. And then shortly after, Shelly dies. You know, is it coincidence or was they just couldn't take it no more and just, you know, or Shelly couldn't take it no more and just killed it? You know, I don't know. That's what I believe happened. I believe his parents had something to do with it. Steve was going to finally come forward and to say Shelly had done it. And he reacted out of fear of getting rid of Stephen. And she knew she was about to go down, so she drugged Steve and then killed herself. That's what I believe happened. I've looked at some of the other stories, and that's what resonates in me.
The interview you just heard gave us a lot more perspective that we didn't have before. Even though we don't know if this is all true, knowing that someone does think this is concerning. In our first episode, we told the story of a family who had recovered from their past and had tried their best, but still had tragedy befall them despite their efforts. As you just heard, Jason had a very different story to tell. This all changes things and opens a lot more possibilities for the way this case can go and what we can do about it. And we hope what we are able to do is a lot more to be able to find closure for both sides of the family.
Underestimated Stephen Craft was researched, written, and produced by Asia, Lexi, Destiny, Bailey, and Layla. Intro music by Haley. All other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Bailey. The Underestimated podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community Schools Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping us fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.